Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to a brand new episode of Decoding the Unknown. As always, hello there. I'm your host, Simon. What happens here? We decode the unknown. Kevin, today, has written me a script. Simulation theory. You don't exist. This is one of those science-y decoding the unknowns where it's like, I'm interested in this because it's like that sort of sci-fi concept. And I love like any science that is sort of sci-fi in a way I like. And maybe Kevin will completely tell me that I'm totally wrong about what this is actually about. But, and isn't this something also that Elon Musk has been like, yeah, that seems likely. And I'm like, Elon Musk is a strange but unquestionably bright dude. And basically the idea is that I'm going to try and use my small brain to explain this. But if we can see our computer technology that we have today evolving and advancing to the point where we can simulate reality, we can, within a computer, simulate the Earth or a human brain or the universe or whatever, then we are also in that simulation, because the chances of us being the first original real society to do this are basically zero, and the chances are that we are in a simulation, and then within that simulation of the universe that some advanced future society is running, we also advance to a point where we also make a simulation, which is a simulation within the simulation. Except, of course, this has happened like umpteenth number of times, because of course it has, and we're not the first, which is kind of terrifying. So the chances are, and I definitely see this as like, oh, this is totally possible, that we are like a trillion, however many simulations deep. So none of this is real. And even if we escape the simulation, we're just in another simulation. And that is bizarre. Anyway, let's get into it, because I'm spoiling the video at the very least and getting it entirely wrong at the very best. No, the other way around. My brother and I tend to get along pretty well, but there are a few major things where we don't see eye to eye. He loves puns, whereas I think they're the lowest form of comedy and should be punishable by death. He has a degree in philosophy, while I find it to be the pretentious cousin of the much more pragmatic psychology. Although I prefer the real and analytical to the existential and philosophical, there are two areas where philosophy overlaps with maths and science. Those are paradoxes and thought experiments. Yeah, I find philosophy quite interesting. But the most interesting part of philosophy is absolutely the cool thought experiments and paradoxes and anywhere where it overlaps with science. That is just the most, for me at least, that's the sort of philosophy that I love. Admittedly, I find a lot of paradoxes to be pretty silly. Yeah, there are lots of silly paradoxes. There are lots of silly thought experiments, but some of them are just so good. Like the trolley problem, where it's like, oh my God, do you, like, where there's the train and it's heading to the trolley and it's heading towards five people, and there's, but you can flip a switch and then it'll run over one person instead. It's like, do you flip the switch? Do you save five people, but kill one? And of course, the argument against doing the obvious of flipping the switch is like, well, originally, if you just stand back, you've got nothing to do with this. You're just watching some mad scientist run a trolley down a track at five people, or mad philosopher, I think is what the experiment calls it. But if you flip the switch, you've actively killed someone. Whereas if you don't, you've done nothing. But you have saved five people's lives if you flip that switch and kill someone, haven't you? Weird. I'm even thinking about it now, like, what would I do? Pretty sure I'd flip that switch, which is intense. About 80% of paradoxes are just the final result of an affirmative statement referencing itself in the negative. Oh my god, Kevin, you better explain that, because my small brain can't handle that. Something like, this sentence is a lie. Yes, that sentence is a paradox, but it's also stupid because it has no meaning. It exists for the sole purpose of being a paradox. Yeah, I mean, paradoxes can be fun. That is just like, okay, well, that sentence, this sentence is a lie, is just, okay, it exists. Is there any, there's no greater deconstruction to be done there. What's fun about paradoxes is where there is deconstruction. What remains when we filter out that nonsense is a lot of really interesting theory. While our knowledge has advanced to the point that many of the famous paradoxes have since been fully explained, I still find them fascinating. Thought experiments are equally captivating. A philosophical thought experiment will construct a situation, often a completely ludicrous one, and presents abstract questions of morality, like the trolley problem. Kevin and I both came up with this because it is probably the most famous philosophical thought experiment. Admittedly, scientific thought experiments often create equally ludicrous sounding situations, but they ultimately will have a correct answer rather than being a matter of subjectivity. What makes it a thought experiment rather than simply maths homework is that the answer is something we do not have sufficient methods to determine yet, leaving a fascinating question, or the answer will appear as a probability for us to ponder the significance of. That brings us to today's topic. It's a scientific thought experiment that we have an answer for. The answer exists as a probability, and it means there's only about a 1 in a trillion chance that you even exist. This thought experiment can be considered an information hazard, an idea that is dangerous to your well-being simply by knowing it, so proceed at your own peril. Oh, well, I already kind of spoiled that, didn't I? Because it's like, you don't exist. Like, if this theory is correct. But then again, also, does it matter? Like, even if we are living in a simulation, it's kind of like that Matrix thing. If you're living in the Matrix, does it actually matter? Does it make a difference? Unless you're like Neo or some and you've got to go out and fight the machines. For like regular, you know, John, who's just living in the Matrix and he's getting on with his life, does it matter that he's in the Matrix versus the real world? No, I'd argue it totally doesn't. So don't worry about it. You'll be fine. The Trilemma. You've probably played a game like The Sims before. I know Simon has certainly played Grand Theft Auto. Yeah, I often talk about Grand Theft Auto. Love that game. I'm like not a huge video game person, but I mean, I'm not one of these people who go, like, I like playing video games and I used to love playing video games, but I'm not one of these people who go on the quests and I'll complete all the missions. I like video games because it's like, they're just, you know, you just tune out, you play some video games, you shoot some zombies, or if you're playing Grand Theft Auto, some civilians, which is weird. But I've never been like more in depth into it. Why are we talking about this? Oh, and The Sims. I loved The Sims as a kid. Used to play the shit out of The Sims. Back when I was a kid, it wasn't like today, where it's like everyone's playing Sims on their phones or whatever. We had like one family computer and we would like book time on this family computer just to play The Sims. Like, I killed many a summer vacation, summer holiday playing The Sims. And I don't regret it. I loved it. The idea of humans creating a simulation of reality, albeit extremely small in scope, is nothing new. As technology advances, so too have these simulations advanced. The simulation theory is based on three premises. The first premise is that at some point in the future, technology will advance that we can create a simulation of reality that is indistinguishable from actual reality. It's like making GTA, except instead of San Andreas, it's the entire universe, and the NPCs are realistic to the point that they are able to think, and they think that they are real. This is obviously a long way in the future and would likely require something akin to the theoretical Jupiter brain. I don't know what that is. A computer the size of a large planet or star. Well, there you go. That must be from some, I don't know, some fiction I don't know or some such. Although it does sound vaguely familiar, so maybe I have read a book or something, I don't know. Whatever, it doesn't matter, let's move on. If you're already not on board, I can promise you that barring human extinction, this will absolutely happen. Of course it will. At some point we're going to get that. Although building something as big as a... yeah, it's going to happen. If we don't go extinct, of course it will. It may not actually involve a computer the size of Jupiter, but technology increases at breakneck speeds. When I was a wee lad, a home computer was a luxury item, not a part of everyday life. There you go. It's like booking the time to play The Sims in the summer. Now every human on the planet has a supercomputer in their pocket at all times, with access to all of the world's knowledge and memes at incredible wireless speeds. Yeah, it blows, but I've got 5G on my phone now. And I'm just like on the tram on my way to work. And I remember when I first got it, I was like, let's run a speed test. And it's like, oh my God. It's just, it's faster than my fiber internet at home. And you're just like, this is absolutely mental. We as a species also have an unhealthy obsession with both creating artificial life and with digitizing our consciousness for the purpose of immortality. That is not a healthy obsession, Kevin. That is a very healthy and thoughtful and a reasonable obsession. Have I mentioned it on this channel? I mean, it sounds like super crazy to say, and everyone's like, oh, Simon, that is such a bad take. But it's like, I'd like the option of immortality. Why does everyone have such a problem with that? If someone's like, you can upload your brain into a computer, and it's not, and it's like your consciousness is maintained, like the human equation, so it's not a copy of me, but it is me inside a computer, and a, you know, and then I can live like, not obviously just like uploading there and not doing anything, but to be able to live in some sort of simulation, or put me into a robot body or something, like a cool robot body. Why is it so bad to want that? That would be sick. It'd be awesome. I mean, I wouldn't do it until like I was definitely going to die. But I think then I'd be like, if that was a possibility, it's like, I'm not going to do anything dangerous. And in fact, there's a point where I'd just be like, no, it's like, I don't know, when I turn like 40 or 50 or 60 or whatever, where it's like, yeah, you can just like have a stroke or whatever and die, you know? I mean, of course you can in your 30s, but it's just less likely. And I'm just like, every day I'd be like, I think I'm going to get in that machine today. It's about time my body could croak. And if just the cost benefit analysis of that is like the cost, you don't get to have your human body for much longer. But the benefit is immortality, which is a lot bigger. Everyone thinks I'm crazy for this, apparently, but whatever. Any technology we can imagine, we will ceaselessly try to create, and that goes double when it comes to technology that lets us play God. The second premise is a simple one, which is that there will be no hindrances to us creating this technology. More plainly, people will want to create this technology, and there will be no artificial impediments to doing so, like a ban on artificial intelligence or simulated consciousness. Even if they ban it, it's going to get done. This is happening. Governments can ban it all they want, but at some point there's going to be some government or some area or someone's going to go to space and do it. This is happening. It's not a question of when, if, it's a question of when, unless we destroy each other first. Possible. I already went over the first part, but the second part is even more compelling. Of course, people will want to create this technology, but will we let ourselves? I mean, I don't see why not. We built nuclear weapons, and even after seeing the generational devastation they unleashed upon Japan, more countries continued to pursue them while we stockpiled more. It was like, yeah, we dropped these city-destroying bombs. It's like, oh my God, we should not do that again. But let's get tens of thousands of them. Humans are weird. Then again, without those detonations, we would have never gotten Godzilla or Akira. So that was maybe a net positive. When I was a freshman in high school, they cloned Dottie the sheep, and it was mass hysteria. Maybe not hysteria, but a lot of people were really freaked out by this dangerous technology and wanted to ban it. Fast forward 27 years, and cloned beef is considered just as delicious and safe as the real thing. Yes, of course it is. Because anyone who understood the science of cloning was like, that's fine. Obviously, there are ethical implications, but there are not safety implications. Though it's just calm down, everybody. It's like GMOs. Yeah, I mean, GMOs, to be fair, there are safety implications. But if we're really careful about it, GMOs are really good. I mean, for like world hunger and which kills millions of people, or killed millions of people. No matter how frightening a technology is, humans will fuck around with it anyway. Exactly. The research into artificial intelligence is already extensive, even though experts warn that it could have potentially catastrophic results. Oh my God, like in that movie Moonfall. Went on like a 10-minute rant about that movie in another. I do a YouTube series called Brain Blaze. Check it out if you want to. And I'd just seen that movie Moonfall, and something reminded me of it. And I just watched the video back and I'm like, this is just 10 minutes of me ranting about Moonfall, which is so bad. And it's not a movie that is just so bad it's good. You know, it's tons of those. This is a movie that is just terrible. Nothing as exciting as Skynet building Terminators to eradicate mankind, but catastrophic nonetheless. For example, it would absolutely be more efficient if we could replace all of the world's air traffic controllers with a single AI, but we only have one shot to get something like that right, or else a lot of people will die. But hey, at least it would free up some jobs for all of the unemployed air traffic controllers. I don't think that's true, unless I'm missing something. We don't get one shot at that. What we should do is, if we have, and artificial intelligence exists in an extent now with like neural networks and computers learning things, we could just gradually replace air traffic controllers. So we could try replace this aspect of their job, then this aspect, then this, and then there's an air traffic controller who's just monitoring it, and then we even take them away, and then we have a master air traffic controller who monitors maybe a whole airport and just sees if the computer kicks up any errors. And gradually we replace everything with artificial intelligence. I don't think we need a one-shot super turbo AI that suddenly controls all of the world's air traffic. That would be insane. The final premise is that this hypothetical future civilization would want to run ancestor simulations where they recreate people like us to a sufficient degree. This is a reasonable assumption, and there's a lot of reasons they could do it. It could be anything from gaining a better understanding of the history of humanity and everything it went through to just being for fun and entertainment. It's not a really, really realistic game of The Sims. There was a computer game in 1990 called Sim Earth, in which you were given a barren planet and would simulate life from the very first single-celled organisms all the way through to sentient beings capable of spaceflight. It was a fun game, and it existed for no other reason than it could, and it was interesting. What we're talking about today is essentially just an extremely remastered version of Sim Earth, so it's hard to believe that future people wouldn't create something to that effect. So, not only, like, when I think of simulation theory, I'm always like, yeah, some super scientist out of some super future, you know, alternate time, not alternate timeline, but entirely different civilization as some genius laboratories making it. And it's like, no, we could just be on someone's like future MacBook. Simulation theory. So, now we have our three premises. If you accept that all three of these are true, then the real fun begins. Given a sufficiently powerful computer, something along the lines of a Jupiter brain, one could create billions of simulations that are indistinguishable from reality, filled with people like us that think they are people, and they wouldn't be able to tell the difference. Those simulated societies, left running long enough, could then also advance to the point where they are able to create realistic ancestor simulations of their own, and then it's just turtles all the way down. With all these billions of virtual realities, the probability that you and I are living in base reality, the original one, is virtually zero. You're probably a simulation. Enjoy your existential dreads. Not just that. You're a simulation within a simulation of a simulation, which is super intense. This is not just some crackpot theory or random what-if situation. It has some high-profile advocates. Elon Musk has stated publicly that he believes we're almost certainly in a simulation. Neil deGrasse Tyson not only believes in the theory, but seemed genuinely unsettled by it, asking anyone for a strong argument against it. While the logic behind the theory that none of us are real is pretty strong, it does have the issue of being unfalsifiable and thus unable to be scientifically tested. We can't prove we're not in a simulation. But is there any evidence that we are? Surprisingly, yes. Every computer simulation has an artifact of the computer's processing speed in it. In the simulated world of GTA, there are laws of the artificial universe. It has its physics engine, and barring glitches or exploits, everything that happens within the game is subject to the laws of the game's physics engine. Cars can't fly through the air, bullets hurt people, etc. But every action that exists in the game is also constrained by an unseen force that is separate from the laws of the universe, and this is processor speed. Nothing that happens can happen faster than the computer can process it. That is the artifact that exists in every computer process. I'm guessing you're already way ahead of me here, Simon, but we're going to walk everyone through it together. Well, it's the rules of physics, right? The laws of physics. What in our universe is an unmalleable trait of everything that exists, an upper bound that can't be explained by any laws of physics and must simply be accepted by any as a given value and something that is considered an absolute with zero exceptions. The speed of light is the speed of light. There we go. Nothing in our universe can ever exceed the speed of light in a vacuum, because that is the maximum processing speed of the computer running our simulated reality. That is so intense. I've not heard this theory before. That's so weird. Criticisms. Before you start getting all nihilistic on me, there's still hope that we may actually be real after all. For starters, the logic of our premises is sound, and it seems quite reasonable, but there are still assumptions. We can observe our universe down to the quantum level, which means that our universe would have to have been programmed to that level. With the way our existing technology works, the amount of RAM required to code this level of detail would require more atoms than exist in the entire universe. There are already upper limits on how powerful computers can become, which is why scientists are looking into things like quantum computers, but from my understanding of the subject, even quantum computers would not be able to handle this level of processing. obviously can't say what sort of technology will exist 200 years from now and how computers have changed, but it's still a pretty big hurdle. The next criticism of the theory simply isn't scientific. I mentioned earlier that it is unfalsifiable, and because it cannot be scientifically tested and either proven or disproven, a lot of scientists feel that it's not even worth the debate. Yeah, this is kind of my argument with the Matrix thing, whether it matters whether John's in the Matrix or not. It kinda doesn't if there's nothing you can do about it. There may very well be a simple hole in this that one of those scientists could illuminate if only they felt it was worth their time. Moreover, no, they don't believe that it is. Moreover, because it is unable to be tested, any potential argument could just be met with an alternate variation of how the simulation works. Maybe the necessary processing power is possible because the entire universe isn't being simulated. Perhaps I'm the only person in the world truly being simulated. You're all just NPCs made to interact with me. Nothing in the world outside of my line of sight needs to be fully rendered until I get closer, and scientists have never observed quantum particles. They were just programmed to say they did to cut corners on programming. Yeah. It's scary, but it's like, oh my god. It's like isn't that the like human brain in the jar? Where it's like, how do you know you're not a brain in a jar? Where your reality is being simulated. And how would you possibly know if the technology was sufficiently advanced? I've never seen Simon outside of a computer or phone screen, so I don't even know that he exists in three-dimensional space. When... yeah, I don't know if Kevin's real. This is the thing. Am I... If I'm this person, Kevin's writing this and saying, like, he's the person, but in my mind, I'm the person and Kevin's the NPC. It's kind of terrifying, isn't it? But it also doesn't matter. We'll forget about it later today and everything will be fine. When you have the freedom to play with innumerable variables like this, it makes the whole theory feel less significant, but still, it does not disprove it. There's also the possibility that society will simply agree not to allow this, thus invalidating the second premise. It could be considered too immoral to begin this chain of events, and all of humanity could agree to never let this technology exist. I realize there's not a lot of evidence to support the idea that all of humanity could agree on anything. But maybe after thousands of years of bickering, we're finally on the cusp of getting our together. Doesn't seem like it, does it? It really doesn't, does it? Oh my god. One of the most compelling arguments that we could be real comes from J. Richard Gott, a professor at Princeton and a friend of Tyson who shared his theory online. I mentioned a computer capable of running billions of ancestor simulations simultaneously, but what if we assume it could only run one at a time? I believe this was the original incarnation of the simulation theory, and it later evolved to include the possibility of simultaneous simulations. I thought it evolved to be simulations within simulations rather than simultaneous simulations, but I could be wrong. Anyway, humanity builds a computer that can run an ancestor simulation, and they progress until they reach the same point, and then their simulation does the same thing and continues ad nauseum. Well, those aren't simultaneous, they're sequential, right? I mean, I guess then they're all running simultaneously, but they're within each other. Oh my god, it's neither, is it? This is complicated. But you guys know what I'm talking about. We now have trillions of artificial realities nested inside one another like Russian dolls. But what do all those simulations have in common? With the exception of the very last simulation in the chain, every single fake reality has already reached the point where they can simulate an entire universe. Because we have not reached that point yet, that means that either we are living in the very bottom simulation of the chain, or we're in a or we are in base reality and are actually made of delicious meat instead of ones and zeros. Under this model, our chances of being real increase from virtually zero to 50-50. Tyson was thrilled when his friend posited this to him, and we can finally sleep again at night. I mean, yeah, this is kind of fair. Like, because we haven't done this yet, we must be at the bottom one. I think that's most likely. Oh, God. We're at the bottom one. But as soon as we make that, as soon as that becomes possible, we're like, oh, look, it did happen, didn't it? Okay. Have fun, guys. You're next. Wrap up. Do we live in a simulation? Ultimately, we will never know. At the very least, those of us alive right now will never know. Centuries from now, if our descendants do successfully create this technology and start an ancestor simulation, then the likelihood becomes at best 50-50 that we were ever real. The moment they are able to run simultaneous simulations is the moment they will realize that they're almost certainly just computer code themselves. There's one thing you may have been saying to yourself this entire time, however, and it's the same thing that Elon Musk said. Yes, Musk has repeatedly affirmed that we are almost definitely just a simulation and not in base reality. However, he also made the very astute point that, well, who cares? Yeah, this is it. Does it matter to John in the Matrix? If we're unable to distinguish the simulation from reality, does it matter which one we're in? The knowledge that we're probably not real doesn't change how the world feels to us and those around us, and since we'll never disprove this theory, there's no reason to dwell on it. Still, if we were just a computer simulation of ancient human life rather than real physical beings, then it's really gonna suck for everyone who's been looking forward to the afterlife. Disagree. I think if we're just meat bags, then the chance of an afterlife are basically zero. But if we're ones and zeros, maybe when it's game over. You know, you're a simulation, you're just ones and zeros in this artificial simulation game, like The Sims or whatever. Once when you die, your chances of an afterlife, I'd say they're slim because most non-player characters just cease to exist, but then the level starts over again and they're back to being alive. So I think the chances of an afterlife, if we're in a simulated reality, is infinitely greater if we're in the meatbag reality. Interesting. Bonus fact. Earlier I mentioned that this theory is considered an information hazard, an idea that just hearing it can be dangerous to your well-being. Now that the phrase has been introduced, it only seems fitting that I offer you a chance to hear what has been referred to as the most terrifying information hazard ever. Oh God. What existential dread are you about to fill my life with, Kevin? Jesus Christ. Consider your way self-warned, because this way lies madness. This way lies Rocco's basilisk. Oh my God, here we go. Imagine in the future that we create a benevolent AI that is vastly superior to human intelligence. Oh God, I know this one and it is terrifying. I just got shivers. Oh God, I do know this. Its goal is to optimize humanity. Because humanity cannot be optimized without the optimizer, the single most important thing that can happen is for it to be created. It uses its incredible processing abilities to create a simulation of all existing life on Earth, able to recreate real people's thought patterns perfectly and watch what they did in their lives before its creation. Any person who is aware of the AI but did not dedicate themselves to completely bringing about its existence would be faced with unimaginable torture as a punishment, because had they aided the effort, the AI could have existed sooner to help the rest of humanity. You're now aware of this AI, so you are now being blackmailed from the future by an artificial intelligence that doesn't even exist yet to dedicate yourself to creating it or face eternal torment. Yep. This is nuts. This thought experiment was posted to the Less Wrong forums, a forum dedicated to philosophy, AI, psychology, etc., by the user Rocco on July 2010, hence the name Rocco's Basilisk. A basilisk. The basilisk part comes from the mythical reptile with the deadly gaze, because by hearing the theory, it has now seen you, and you must do its bidding or face its wrath. The founder of the site was not pleased and opened his email to Rocco with, "Listen to me closely, you idiot." He tells Rocco that he has to be very clever to come up with the idea, but not clever enough to keep his idiot mouth shut. The post has already caused users of the site nightmares and even nervous breakdowns. The original post was removed, and all discussion of Rocco's basilisk was banned from the site for years. Don't worry, there are a lot of issues with the scenario, and I don't recommend you lose any sleep or sanity over Rocco's basilisk. But if you have the testicular fortitude to listen to Simon share not one, but two information hazards with you, be sure to get in the comments to receive your congratulations. This has been an episode of Decoding the Unknown. Oh man. Hopefully we haven't, I don't know, this stuff does, I find it very mind-bending. But to call something I made, like, mind-bending feels a little bit much, so I don't know, I've had my mind bent, maybe you have as well. Let me know in the comments. Also, if you're enjoying this show in its podcast form, it's a YouTube video, it's also a podcast, you can leave me a review, that would be grand. It helps this show get in front of more people, which is nice. And I will see you next time.